So two seconds before 10 past. So let's start the last session. So I just would like to hand over to Nadia, please.
Okay, I'll start anyway. Good afternoon, everyone. During this session, we're going to talk about accounting policies and accounting estimates. The question about the distinction between accounting policies and accounting estimates originally came from ESMA, which is a European market regulator. In its submission to the IFRS Interpretations Committee, ESMA said that it had observed divergent practices in terms of how people interpret what's an accounting policy and what's an accounting estimate. And that was the reason for its submission. The board considered this issue and decided to add the issue to its agenda. The board finally published the exposure draft on this distinction last month in September 2017. I would like to make a couple of points about this exposure draft before we proceed with our discussion. First of all, I would like to say that this is an unusual exposure draft, and I'll explain why. Firstly, this proposed amendment is not really a typical narrow scope amendment to a specific standard. This amendment is a cross-cutting issue, a cross-cutting amendment, because it does apply to all IFRS standards, starting pretty much from IFRS 1 to IS 41. Peter, who is going to join us shortly, and I had to deal with so many various scenarios and situations during the course of this project, testing our amendments on fair values, pensions, provisions, share-based payments, and finally on the most infamous discussion about FIFO and weighted average cost formulas for inventories. So as I said, it is a cross-cutting issue, and it is important for many standards other than IS 8. Secondly, as the introduction to the exposure draft points out, the board realized during the course of this project that this amendment is not going to address every single issue that exists in practice. So this is a clarification of a principle that currently exists in IS 8. Nevertheless, the board very carefully considered whether it should or should not proceed with this amendment, given that it's not a specific amendment in the sense where the debit or credit goes, or like, you know, how to calculate things. So the board very carefully considered whether it should go ahead with this amendment, given that you know, it has such a broad scope. Nevertheless, the board did conclude that it wants to go ahead with this proposal because the board considered that the clarification was useful and that it should proceed with the exposure draft. So this is it. This is my introduction about this exposure draft. And as I said, it was published in September. The comment period ends in January after Christmas. And with all that said, I think we'll proceed to questions on the exposure draft. Hopefully you had a chance to look at the exposure draft. And we proceed with question number one, which is on page 5 of the exposure draft.
Where was the exposure draft? Mm-hmm.
And by any means, like, we'll start with question number one, which deals with the definition of accounting policies. But if you would like to start with overall observations about the exposure draft, by any means, feel free to do so. But as long as you tell me what it is that you're talking about, just to direct me a little bit. So, so that's it from me.
Any question of or comment?
After going through this amendment, I felt that whatever has been proposed, I understood the same way, like even with the earlier standard. So I did not find something, anything new in it, other than making it quite obvious and making it more clear. The intention of the standard in terms of difference between a policy change and an estimation change, or a difference between a policy and an estimate, as well as making more clear about the inventory issue methodology. So I did not find it anything game-changing in this, other than making more clarifying things for a preparer.
So you think it you know, our new wording is much clearer than before.
Yeah, it is more clarifying or making things easier to understand.
Okay, good. Thank you. Colin, please.
I sort of agree with that. It does create less ambiguity in my mind and creates I thought it was a bit complicated before in terms of terminology. It simplifies a little bit more. Just curious on the inventory example, that it's placed under IS-8. What would have been IS-2 as an example, such as a change in policy regarding depreciations example is in IS-16. Sort of, I find it a bit odd that it's got a specific example in here rather than if that's, and I understand reading the background to that, it's obviously been a bit diverse in practice in changing from a weighted average cost method to a FIFO method and vice versa. Is that the reason behind it? Because that's been an issue of interpretation that's come up in the past. And if it has, would it be a better place than IS-2? Because that's where someone would read that type of stuff and pick it up. That makes sense.
No, that's a very important. And it starts coming up as the exposure draft goes through its life cycle, so to speak. The main reason why we put an ISA is partly because it was easier at that stage and we didn't want to make any consequential amendments, but that's probably not the main reason. One of the main reasons was we wanted to demonstrate how the clarified principles worked in different scenarios. And we also wanted to compare and contrast cost formulas in IS-2 for interchangeable inventories with changes in valuation and estimation techniques in the previous paragraphs, because the conclusions are different. One is considered to be an accounting estimate, and another one is considered to be an accounting policy. And we just thought contrasting them would help people to understand our logic in terms of like what's what.
To be honest, we didn't really want to include that example, but every meeting we had, people said, oh, how does this apply? And I don't think it's because people are changing between cost methods ever, actually. I think it was a natural question that people came to their minds and they thought it'd be helpful to clarify it, but we would have much preferred not to include it at all.
Peter and I would thought if there is no other benefit coming out from the idea, just clarifying explicitly this only point would be a huge benefit by itself, because the amount of time we spent discussing and debating with people was significant. For some reason, everyone got very excited about it. And also, I think people wanted to test our proposals and our improvements on all sorts of situations, and that was the most challenging situation of all. Because I think the main reason for me why it was challenging was because IS-2 was written such a long time ago. It used completely different terminology, completely different mindset. Maybe estimates were not that popular at that point in time. So it was a valid challenge that people threw at us, and we just thought we will cope as much as like in the best possible way.
So far, our exposure draft is well received. Do you have any other comment?
I also agree that it's better to have this. Good to have this clarification. The only question which came in our mind is that why are you talking about ordinarily interchangeable items and why not generalize that? Then we realize that if it is not coming under the category of ordinarily interchangeable, it will come under the category of specific identification of costs. So therefore that this terminology also I cannot criticize, that why are we using this ordinarily interchangeable specifically, because we realize that if it is not ordinarily interchangeable, then it will be specific costs. So therefore this amendment does not apply to that. So I think it's well worded, and I don't think there is any problem.
Thank you very much. I would also like to pick up on this point, because some of the feedback that we started hearing on this exposure draft, that perhaps we could have used more examples, which I'm not saying if it's right feedback or wrong feedback, but what I'm trying to say, your comment points out exactly to the issue of having more examples, how intricate it is to have a good example, you know, to have a good example to demonstrate a certain point, like because every single word counts, like inventories as opposed to interchangeable inventories. You have to create very specific fact pattern to demonstrate what it is like it must set the conclusions you later draw out of that fact. I'm sorry, it's just I'm a little bit sidetracking, but I just know that some people are going to say that maybe we could have used more examples. Another point on the examples I would like to make is that we also felt that ISA already includes a number of examples, like more specifically paragraph 32 lists stations when accounting estimates might be required. So on balance, again, to the point, thank you that you brought it up, the point that I'm trying to make, that A, examples are not that simple, and B, that we felt there is sufficient number of examples in ISA as it is.
The only other point which may arise is that instead of changing the standard per se, could you have incorporated it in illustrated example? That could be another question which could be asked. Because as Srinath has rightly said, that this has always been the position. I'm sure that some reference was there, otherwise this chapter would not have been opened. So, I mean, instead of touching the standard per se, could it be through illustrated example or not? But it's all the same. You know, no harm is done if it is incorporated in the standard per se.
Thank you.
Stephen?
Everyone's been positive so far, so I thought I ought to just throw in a small observation. And in the last session, we looked at the specific words used. My experience just reading through the amendment was when I saw measurement bases, I wasn't sure what that meant until I went down to the examples. So for my bad debt provision, I went from a position of saying, well, okay, I think everything more than 3 months is at risk and you need detail, and then I'll change it to 4 months. Is that a change in measurement bases? I wasn't sure how that fitted in. Accounting policy, is that a change in accounting policy? I'm not saying it's a big problem. Yeah, it's just my experience. So when I saw that, I had to check that it meant what I thought it meant. I haven't got a better word.
Okay, Mario.
I think the proposals in the exposure draft are really good. I like the idea, I like the guidance that it provides. I was just wondering, maybe it's something that other people already had experienced. Suppose that you have a change in management, and the new manager decides that a certain methodology used to measure something that's not suitable anymore, and decides to change that methodology to another one, which could have been used before. No new information, no new nothing, just a change in person, and the new person doesn't like the old methodology. I would classify that as a change in estimate, but it sometimes creates some tension because people might question whether the old methodology was actually right. Wasn't that a mistake? Wasn't that an error? So I don't know if there was. I don't know if there is any room to further explore that in this project.
Interesting question.
It is a good question, and it is a question about not so much about distinction in my mind between policies and estimates, but it's threshold for the change in accounting estimates. And this question came up in different shapes and forms. Yeah. People came up in different examples, and basically it all comes to should we increase or higher up, raise the threshold for changes in accounting estimates, because some people believe the existing threshold in ISA for the changes is very low. pretty much entities can do, rightly or wrongly, people say so, like they think entities can justify pretty much any change in accounting estimates. And the answer to your question is that this question was not in the scope of this, of this project. It's a good question. It's a good question. And I'm sure it will come up in comment letters and we'll decide on how to proceed with it. But at this stage, although we sensed there is an interest to it, we didn't do anything in terms of standard setting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Actually, it's really good question. It really, you know, hit the point we need to seriously think. Mm-hmm. In your example, there is no new information, no environmental change. Mm-hmm. So it is only the preference of the management.
Yeah.
The management didn't like the previous method, which the entity could have taken, but they didn't take it. The previous manager didn't take.
Yes.
So I just want, I dislike it, so I change it. So is it the accounting policy change or estimate change? So if it's accounting policy change, it should be something like a measurement basis change. But if the change is not that significant, it's not worth calling it as a measurement-based change. Mm-hmm. But then how shall we judge? That's a difficult area. So then the question is, the real point is whether or not we should take a retrospective application or prospective application. And in your case, in your example, if the judgment is only by the management preference, from the user's point of view, maybe user want retrospective application, otherwise they cannot, it will mislead the trend information. Mm-hmm. Having said that, we didn't make this proposal that specific. So we could have gone this way. Say for example, we call it retrospective change and the prospective change. In order to make you prospective change, the condition is like this. Mm-hmm. So say if we could make a condition, so if the only that change comes from the preference of management, then you need to go to retrospective. We could make it in this way. Mm-hmm. However, we didn't do such a rule-based specific, but instead we defined what's the accounting policy is, what the estimate is, and try to articulate if there is a good reason, good environmental change or new information, then you can go to estimate change. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's normally the change of accounting policy. But I'm not quite sure.
The problem is that sometimes the new information is in the head of the new manager. But how can you provide evidence of that?
That is exactly the point we need to clarify. So I think your question was very good. Thank you. Christo, is it relating to this?
No.
In the case,
Richard can go first. No problem.
Yeah, you've got a statement, a change in accounting estimate, a change in estimate, and a change in minimum basis is a change in policy, which is fine. I think one of the grayer areas is you have a lot of items that are carried at a value which is basically the output of a model, mark to model accounting, and the model tends to get more sophisticated, more experience. So if you're changing the model, I consider that to be a change in estimate.
Yeah.
But I know sometimes we've had discussions with some auditors say, well, no, you've gone from a model which wasn't risk weighted to a model which is risk weighted. That's a change in policy. So I think it would be helpful to put in an example talking about change in estimation technique.
Richard, just because we did in paragraph 32, we did talk specifically about changes in valuation techniques and estimation techniques. I think that was the purpose of addressing that issue. Did you feel it wasn't paragraph 32A in the exposure draft.
It says selecting that estimation technique. It doesn't say changing it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Okay. So, overall, I'm fine with the proposals, and I think they help. It doesn't make the world look different, but they help a little bit. I've actually read the selection of valuation and estimation techniques as both selecting and reselecting, which means changing them. It's right, that may need to be better clarified, but I think that will help, because oftentimes over the years you get more sophisticated in the techniques you're applying, and so far it was always a question, well, if I change from one technique to the other, if that's an accounting policy change, I rather don't do it, because that means retrospective, people don't know whether it's an error or whatever. And with that now being under the roof of changes in estimates, I think makes it easier to move from a more simplified to a more sophisticated approach. So I think that is helpful. I agree with Stephen that there are a couple of terms in there that carry more weight now, like measurement basis, like accounting practices. And as ISA goes very deep in defining things, it even defines IFRS. It would be odd now to use terms in the definition, in this case of accounting policy, that themselves are not really defined. So I think you should add something on what are measurement based and what are accounting practices. Because practice is always something that's what's done in practice. Does that mean everything done in practice is a policy? Difficult. So I think that would be helpful. About the inventories, when I read it, I thought there must be more than that one case of something that is on the left side of the borderline. I couldn't think of one, but I was thinking about techniques for IFRS 2 and others, but they all appear to be valuation techniques. I think it would be easier understood if this paragraph was in IS 2. It somehow looks a little bit misplaced. I think, Colin, you made the same point. It looks a little bit misplaced here. And I think in the context of IAS 2, it would be easier to understand it, because I think the most important notion is there is no hurdle for selecting between average and FIFO. It's nothing like you take FIFO if you think the pattern is more FIFO, otherwise you choose, but it's really more a decision you can take, and that's why there is no estimation element in it. But I think you cannot read this and understand it without going back to IS2. But then it would be easier if that paragraph is in IS2 rather than being here. So I would actually make that as a consequential amendment to IS2 rather than keeping it in here. My last point is the deletion of the example. I fully understand where you're coming from, but I think it's once or twice in the past that I heard that there were companies who relied on this example when thinking about how deep do I need to go with the components approach. Because the example goes a little bit like, if you don't have the data available, you don't have to fully apply it. That's a message that's coming out of the example. Now, if the example is taken away, that may have, I don't know whether we call it unintended consequence, maybe it is an intended consequence, but it may have consequences not yet considered. But that will be something, particularly look into countries that have recently adopted IFRS. I heard that components approach is always something difficult, because usually most other accounting regimes don't have that, and then the question comes out, how deep do I have to go? And then I heard that people say, well, look at this example. It tells you if you don't have the data, you don't have to fully apply it. So that's a notion that will be taken away, and it should be
at least with caution should be taken away, that people, that we know what we are doing, that it's not an unintended consequence. That will be it.
Thank you very much. Very helpful.
So if we follow the Christian advice that the proper place of IS2 inventory issue should go to IS2 rather than here, in that case, would consequential amendment work?
We will need to think about
it.
And potentially, we might consider that we keep this guidance in IS8 and make some amendments to IS2, or make it, move it to IS2 entirely. We don't know yet. Okay. We'll have to analyze all the feedback.
Is there any other question?
Can I just take you through, like, thank you for your feedback, it seems to be positive, which is good. I'll just take you through the questions, just in case, just for completeness purposes, so that we don't miss out on anything major. So, definition, question number one, definition of accounting policies. Anyone has any strong opinions or reactions to the new definition of accounting policies?
Well, that's where what I said earlier about you should define measurement basis and accounting practices. That's where this one, that comment will come into play.
Yes, thank you very much. I actually had a thought when you were talking about it. It was, again, one of the challenges Peter and I had to deal with is the terminology, because some of the standards are very old and the terminology existed for a really long time. A, some standards are old, and B, some standards are not exactly always consistent, frankly speaking. And just pulling it all together in the amendment that would apply across was quite a big challenge. But nevertheless, you looked at it with a fresh pair of eyes, and that's your reaction, and we'll definitely consider it. Okay, moving on to question number two. Accounting estimates, providing definition of accounting estimates. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's just a further thought on what I was saying about removing the example for IS2. In one sense, it might be helpful for it to be here, because this is saying that it's a change in accounting policy, and quite often a change in your inventory valuation is driven by a change in accounting system. And therefore, immediately your question would be, okay, it's a change in accounting policy, so therefore, how on earth do I restate the comparative? So therefore, there's an advantage of having it here, in that then you can read on and say, well, wait a sec, because you haven't got the data available, you may not need to apply a retrospective restatement.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate the point that's made, I agree with it, but I also see a bit of a negative impact of removing it from here and putting it into IS2 without that additional piece saying that actually, because the data is not available in some instances, you don't need to restate.
I think we might be talking about two slightly different things. So I think one was the point Christoph was making about the example three that's proposed to be deleted.
I thought you made the initial observation.
No. It's the example at the end, which had that the company in the past did not fully apply the components approach because of lacking data.
Yes. I thought someone was referring to 32B, the insertion of...
Yeah, I said that I think that should be moved to ISU, but these were two different comments, unrelated.
Yes, so that's the comment.
Unrelated on comments.
It's the comment on moving 32B to IS2. That I'm referring to.
Yeah, but 32B is making a very narrow point, which is entirely about the choosing between FIFO and weighted average. It's not about any other aspect of inventory valuation.
Yes, I understand that.
But
because it's defining it as an accounting policy, that choice between FIFO and weighted average, if I'm reading that in IS2, then my mind, if I am changing methodology, my mind would easily go on to, well, how on earth do I satisfy what I know I should do when there's a change in accounting policy, and that is change of comparative.
So
If the change is caused by system change,
yeah.
The point is you're saying you can't go backwards and change the comparative.
Okay.
But isn't this saying that if you change from FIFO to weighted average, that's an accounting policy, but if you're changing the precision or you're estimating technique, that's a change in estimate, and that would be prospective.
But I think the moving from FIFO to average due to system changes, then usually you don't have the data for the past, but I think that would then maybe qualify for the exception of going retrospective.
So just saying the advantage of it being here is that you've got a few paragraphs later the exemption. So that might be helpful.
Just to reconcile everyone's points, because I'm sure we'll have to consider that maybe the answer is to keep in both, maybe to keep it in IS-8 and to include some sort of explanation or cross-reference in IS-2. We'll see, we'll definitely consider.
Can I just ask Stephen if he thought his concern would be alleviated? If we did think on balance it was more useful to put 32B in IS-2, to put it in and say, see IS-8 guidance on changing accounting policies, including paragraph 50.
Absolutely.
Because that would seem to accomplish what saying, think about everything there is on changes in accounting policy.
Of course.
So we were on question number two. So far the feedback we received was positive. People liked that we replaced the definition of a change in accounting estimate with a simple definition of an accounting estimate. Seems to have added quite a bit of clarity for people, which is good. So we're moving on to question number three that deals with paragraph 32 on changes in evaluation techniques and estimation techniques. I think we had some feedback on this paragraph, including this threshold, as I said, which we didn't really address. Question four deals with inventories, and we talked about paragraph 32B, and finally we talked briefly about deletion of IG example 3, and that's it from me, really. So it seems to be a good discussion in the sense that you all agreed pretty much.
But maybe finally one question on process, because we now have two IS-8 topics. Is there the idea to somehow align the issuance of them? Because I heard so often that whenever there is a change in standard, a lot of jurisdictions, every change triggers significant cost of getting that into local law or whatever it is, and that's of course if there are two separate changes coming at different times, it's always more difficult than having one joint change and now touching IS-8 twice. If that can be aligned, I think jurisdictions would be grateful for.
Yeah, this is a very good question, and we definitely consider that. And the answer is yes, we will try to land this. I also would like to add that we might have a third change to IS-8 coming out from the voluntary accounting policies project. We have three IS-8 projects going on right now, so we'll definitely consider that. It's definitely makes perfect sense what you're saying.
Any other comment? Maybe have you got significant enough input?
Yeah, I'm very pleased. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that would conclude at today's meeting.